relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
He may have a peculiar relationship to the letter E, but he's still the galactic supermaster, Andrew Klavan. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. And please welcome our very special guest host.
It is true. This is Andrew Klavan of The Daily Wire, sitting in for Sebastian, fighting the urge to just do an imitation of Gorka for the next 3 hours to sound like a Bond villain. You know, yes, Mr. Bond, we expect you to die. But I don't think I'm going to fight that urge down. I also don't want my guests to think that I'm going to, interview them whilst they're strapped to a table with a laser going up between their legs. I think it would be much more relaxing if I just let the spirit of Gorka hover over us as we get going. And we have a terrific lineup of guests, the first being an expert on what I think is the biggest issue in the country. You can point to a million things going wrong with the country right now. We're in a very bad period. This is one of the most difficult periods I've seen in my life, which has lasted now since the Civil War. And I think one of the central issues and possibly the core issue is the corruption of our press. And it's not just a bad press. It's not just a biased press. It is a corrupt, a dirty press, not just telling us things a little slanted, but really spewing lies and cutting off the truth. Alex Marlowe, an old buddy of mine, I haven't seen him in 100 years. I believe it was 1921 we last saw each other during Prohibition. Alex Marlowe, he is editor-in-chief of the terrific site Breitbart News. He has written a book called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Alex, you there?
I am there, Andrew. Thanks to you and for Dr. G's team for having me back on the show.
It's a real pleasure, Alex. I mean, I watch the news. You watch the reporters swarming around Donald Trump and saying to him, are you an asset of the Russians? You know, are you a Russian spy? And then swarming around Joe Biden and saying, what flavor of ice cream is that? And you notice the subtle difference. You know, it's hard to see spot at first, but if you have a lot of expertise in looking at the press, this is not bias. This is corruption. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely it is. And you're so right to point out the ice cream thing, which I cannot get over how people want to portray ice cream as so cool all of a sudden, because this 800-year-old man likes eating ice cream while he wears his aviators. It is the least cool thing I've ever seen. It's so frail and feeble, and that's how Biden looks. But you're right about this, that the media is no longer simply biased. They're weaponized against conservatives. They're weaponized against populists. They're weaponized against the America First crowd and those values in general. If you are not someone who is aiding and abetting the march of the institutional left through our institutions at this time, then they're going to try to take you out. And this is a little different, Andrew, because you and I are both new media veterans, which is, you know, only about 15 years, which is only one-tenth of Biden's lifetime, which is amazing. But in our 15 years or so in new media, it hasn't always been this way. This is a relatively new thing where all of a sudden we can't just agree to disagree. We can't have different approaches to try to get the same conclusion. If you disagree strongly with the left, they will try to take you out. And I know you've experienced that firsthand.
Very much so. And it's appalling to me to watch newsmen basically put forward the case that other newsmen should be taken off the air. Not that they're wrong, not that they disagree, but that they should be gone, that Fox News should be gone, that there should be silence where it used to be. You have the subtitle of your book, The Establishment's Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. What do you mean by that? I mean, this is not just a guys with an opinion, right? It's not just people, oh, we sort of agree with one another. It is actually a dedicated move in the direction of silencing the right.
Yeah, you can see it in relatively plain sight. You have to have a keen eye to it. But a lot of these deals are pretty easy to unwind. And unfortunately, when I researched this book and took about a year or so with a small team, of some of whom were on loan to me from Peter Schweitzer's amazing shop, the Government Accountability Institute, and what we found was that a lot of the major decisions in our newsroom weren't simply about a bunch of liberals who went to Columbia Journalism School and they all think the same. Of course, that's happening too. But a lot of them were about bigger business ties, bigger corporate ties. And this is why you see so many people in the establishment media kissing the butt of China, for example. This is the clearest example. I think this played out over the weekend where I've been at for the last couple of weeks, hanging out in Los Angeles. They still have some of the cafes demanding you wear masks outside. Well, in China over the weekend, they were having these huge gatherings of hundreds, about thousands of people, maskless, all grouped together, no doubt spreading coronavirus. Well, if it's happening in America, we care about it very deeply. If it's happening in China, we don't care about it at all. Why don't we care about it at all? Because these are massive markets for our media industry. They don't want to piss off China, because if they do, they're going to get kicked out of their country, examples of which I document in the book, when people who do accurate reporting on China, if they have access, but they usually don't, they do get kicked out. And I think that's why so much of the media missed the original story about the coronavirus, because NBC News wants to do NBC Universal movies in China. ABC News wants to make all that money from Disney through China. That's just the clearest example of something that's happening in virtually every major narrative in our media today.
It really makes me wonder why the true activists, the real dedicated socialists, the real dedicated leftists, aren't up in arms when they see some of the double dealing that goes on. I mean, I think about Brett Kavanaugh and a woman who couldn't prove that she had ever met him making this accusation, and it becomes raving news, and we have the Me Too movement, and all this stuff is going on. And then Joe Biden gets accused of a woman who actually worked for him, that he threw her up against a wall and penetrated her with his hand, and that is radio silence. The New York Times doesn't cover it for 20 days. When they finally do, it's Easter Sunday. It's buried in the paper. And Dean Baquet, the editor of the New York Times, says, well, you know, Kavanaugh was up for the Supreme Court when Biden was actually running for president. Do the feminists start to say, oh, we're being lied to?
No, you're right about this. And I think some of them do, which is why it's been really exciting to watch someone like Rose McGowan, who has been consistent. And there are a few liberals, not leftists, but liberals, who have been consistent throughout this. And it's been interesting to watch them. Glenn Greenwald comes to mind, someone who's quoted extensively from his actual journalism in the book. And even though I don't think Glenn and I would agree on a lot of stuff politically, we certainly agree that truth is much more important than whatever agenda it is you're trying to set. But Andrew, an interesting tell is I have a whole section on the book relatively early on called The Brett Kavanaugh Hoax, where I break down exactly what you discussed. And I also break down later in the book how the seemingly credible allegations by Tara Reid would have moved voters away from Biden if not towards Trump, at least to a more neutral stance in terms of the election. I write about all this stuff freely in the book, and no one in the left has come after these sections. Why? Because they're all backed up with endnote after endnote, but also because they're true. And the left just doesn't want to talk about it. They want to act like the Kavanaugh hoax was real. They want to act like Joe Biden isn't credibly accused of a violent sexual assault, because that's the only way they're going to get their narrative through.
It really is quite amazing. We're talking to Alex Marlow, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News, where they've been fighting the good fight since for a long time, since before the great Breitbart himself died. The book he's written is called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Alex, if you can hold on a minute, we're going to come back to you in the next segment. You know, I have to say that when I started out as a newspaper man. And I worked in a small town newspaper, but the guys I worked with went on to become some of the biggest reporters in the country, including Adam Nagurny, who was the chief political reporter at the New York Times. And I can remember, and Adam was as left as it was possible to be. And I was a liberal then. I was a kid. You know, I didn't know anything. I was kind of a brainless liberal. But I can remember Nagurny calling me out for being too left wing. I can remember him just saying to me, hey, you know, you have got to tread the line. You have got to deal these stories straight. You've got to tell the truth, even if it's against your point of view. And Nagurny, you know, I loved the guy when I worked with him. He's one of the best reporters I ever met. But when he went to the New York Times, I think the pressure of being at that paper and the way that paper, I always call the New York Times a former newspaper because it has drifted so far to the left that it is no longer reporting the news. He just became one of them. He just transformed. And his transformation, I think, was really part and parcel of the transformation of the news business. It's been sad to see, but it is really one of the most dangerous things affecting the country right now. It's dividing us. It is letting the left run wild. It is really a terrible thing. We're going to be back with Alex Marlow in just a minute.
Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief? Only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Let's get back to Andrew Klavan.
It is true. Andrew Klavan's sitting in for the inimitable. He's not really inimitable because you have to imitate him. There's the imitable Sebastian Gorka, but the irreplaceable Sebastian Gorka. We are here with Alex Marlow, the editor-in-chief of Breitbart News and the author of Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Alex Marlow, it would be easy for people to look at the news, all the various outlets, and think, well, they just happen to agree with one another, or this is kind of a feeling that's going around. But they're actually kind of working together, aren't they?
Yeah, they are working together. One of my favorite examples of this is with the guy named Ben Smith, who is the media columnist for the New York Times. And he got that job because he was the editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed News, which really never turned into much. They were the people who released the bogus PP dossier that was being shopped around Washington and New York newsrooms, and no one would publish it. Well, Ben Smith did and turned out to be totally false. even though it helped further divide the country and cement the fake news era under Trump. But so when BuzzFeed News sort of went under, Ben Smith was out, and he was in, however, as a media columnist for the New York Times, which is one of the most prestigious jobs in media. So Ben Smith had shares in BuzzFeed. And BuzzFeed is owned by NBC Universal. So when Ben Smith writes about BuzzFeed, he does tend to disclose that he's got shares in BuzzFeed, but he never points out that NBC Universal invested $400 million into BuzzFeed. So when he reports on NBC, he never discloses that he is actually a guy who has a major stake in a company that is owned by NBC. I've never caught him disclose it whenever he's reported on NBC. And he's done some of the most harsh criticism of NBC's detractors. Remember when Ronan Farrow went rogue on NBC during the Me Too stuff? Well, he's attacked Ronan Farrow, which is essentially a major soft money contribution on behalf of NBC, where Ben Smith is tied in financially. None of this is disclosed. And what's more, Andrew, he promised he would sell his stock in BuzzFeed when he took the job at the New York Times as of last January. So now it's last July, as far as I know, and I reached out to Ben right before I sent him my final draft. And he did not deny that he still got his stock in BuzzFeed. So that's exactly what it is. It's NBC and the New York Times newsroom. It is literally the same thing. It's not sort of the same thing. It's literally the same thing.
It is amazing. And when you look at that Harvey Weinstein story, all the virtue signaling about Me Too, and there was a major corporation working with its Hollywood owners to cover up for this Hollywood bigwig who was raping. He was raping women, and I was just a lowly screenwriter, which is maybe the lowest thing you can be in Hollywood. But even I knew he was an abusive guy. Everybody knew it, and they just really worked to cover it up. Do people know, Alex? Do people understand how? I know that people don't trust the news media, but do they understand how united, how forceful, and how purposeful they're being?
Yeah, I think that this is a mixed bag. I think more than ever people do. And I think that, thank goodness for people in new media and talk radio who've always led the way on this. I think there are more Americans, maybe even a majority of Americans, who understand that the news is not to be taken literally at this time. As unfortunate as that is, it's not going to get reformed anytime soon. It needs to be discredited. And on topics that have any politics in it, you need to really take it with a grain of salt if you're going to take anything out of those outlets at all. I think more people get it, but sadly, a lot of people don't still. And that is very scary to me, is that when you're watching CNN, when you're watching MSNBC, the most charitable view you can have of it is that it's pro-wrestling. That is the best case scenario. I still don't think everyone thinks that way, though, which is, that's my mission. I know it's your mission, too, Andrew, to try to increase that number.
It's very difficult. You'll see NPR bury the Hunter Biden story, go on Twitter and say, we are burying the Hunter Biden story. And then the Hunter Biden story pans out. It actually plays out to be a valid story. And nobody turns off NPR. Nobody says, well, you lied to me. It's kind of like the wife who keeps taking her husband back in. This time, baby, I'm really going to be true to you. It's really amazing that no matter how many times they lie, people keep listening. You mentioned new media, and you and I really have been on a journey in new media. I mean, we really and we both remember Andrew Breitbart well and how he was a founding member, a builder of new media. How is that project going, do you think? Are we making any inroads? I know that, companies like the one I work for, Daily Wire and Breitbart, sure, they've become big companies. But are we making any inroads getting to the people who just want to pick up their newspaper in the morning or whatever they're reading now and hear the news? Are we reaching the people?
Yeah, the battlefield is always shifting. The one thing that I'm really thrilled about is how we neutralize the establishment press. I do think that the establishment press was able to wield untoward amounts of power. Now I think that the establishment press is pretty much it is the immovable object meets the unstoppable force or whatever it is. Because conservative media combined with talk radio is so big, I do think we push back against each other incredibly effectively. But I'm deeply concerned that the battlefield will shift, because they used to take us on based on our ideas, Andrew. They used to challenge us.
Yeah.
And this is something I've really noticed with my book, which was the top conservative book in the country for 5 or 6 weeks. And it was a New York Times bestseller against their will. even though they bumped me down 9 slots based off of my actual sales. But I know you guys experienced that firsthand. Daily Wire, they do that to you guys too. But still, it was out there. It got no interest from the establishment press. It used to be the establishment press would say, come on my show. I'm going to debate you. I'm going to unpack your ideas. I'm going to beat you on a fair playing field. They don't do that now. They just act like we don't exist. And I think as we get more complacent as a nation, we spend too much time in front of our screens and having food delivered to us. If we get lazy, that's going to be very bad, because conservatives thrive when people are curious and driven intellectually.
You know, it seems to me even worse, and the really dangerous thing is not only do they not engage with us, they're actually trying to shut us down. I mean, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, yep, who got more votes than any president in history, except one, maybe, has been knocked off every social media platform. And yet nobody on the right seems to be saying there's something has to be done. Do you believe that can stand? I've only got about a minute here.
No. I've been a big advocate that people on the right need to take this seriously. Everything should be on the table in terms of fighting back against these tech oligarchs. And you're right about this, because they're moving votes. I believe they're actually moving enough votes to swing some of these close states by picking and choosing what information is out there and by censoring accurate information and promoting inaccurate information that has their political viewpoint. This is a massive, massive problem. And not to mention the right needs to do much more on the entertainment front, which I know is near and dear to your heart. We've done almost nothing on that, with a couple of notable exceptions. That's another place where we're falling down a little bit.
We really have not caught up with that. I've been banging that drum for 20 years now. When I started, I will say this, when I started saying we have to get into the culture, people would stare at me like I came from outer space. Now people call me and ask me, you know, what I'm talking about. They get it. They get that the culture has taken over everything. Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News. Really good book, Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Thanks for coming on, Alex. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Andrew, it's a pleasure.
So we're going to take calls. If you want, 833-33-GORKA, 833-334-6752. Call in. You don't get this with Sebastian, but all my answers are guaranteed 100% correct and will change your life. Will they change your life for the better? That's where you're going to have to call and find out. 833-33-GORKA. We're going to talk more about the lies we're being told by the press and more about the lies we're being told about America, even as America is celebrating its birthday, which is just amazing to me, amazing and rather sad. But we'll talk more in just a few.
America First.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America First. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
All right, we are back. This is Andrew Klavan sitting in for Sebastian Gorka on American First. We're taking calls at 833-33-GORKA, 833-334-6752. You know, I hope you had a good fourth. I took a little time and drove out to the U.S. Marine Memorial in Arlington, right across from Arlington Cemetery. It's the famous statue, I'm sure you've seen it, of raising the flag on Iwo Jima, taken from a photograph at that time when the Marines, the soldiers, were just fighting island by island, trying to dig the Japanese out of their caves. And the Japanese would not surrender. And tremendous cost of life, tremendous difficulties. But finally, the raising of the flag on Iwo Jima became an iconic symbol of victory. And for me, it was an actual journey into the past, because when I was a little kid, and again, this is a long time ago, but when I was a little kid, I used to go to that statue all the time, and it represented America to me. I had a little model of it on my desk at home, and we would go there again and again, and it really said to us, you know, this is what America was. This is victory. This is sacrifice. This is a kind of unity that was felt in America through that time late into the 60s, when things started to unravel. And I was just sitting there. You know how you have these visceral memories? You'll smell something and it's like you've been there. You'll hear a song and you'll just remember what it was like to be there. I had that visceral sense, that physical sense of being back in the past. And it felt like being back in a different world, a different country. I mean, we have July 4th, the most patriotic of patriotic holidays. And to get a nice word out of the Democrats about this country, it was like pulling teeth. I mean, the president of the United States, let's just play a couple of the clips of his speech, right? This is the great triumph of July 4th, the founding of the greatest, freest, richest, most powerful country that has ever existed on God's earth. I mean, if this country is not a success story, I don't know what it is. This is Biden remembering the day, and he was there. Cut five.
245 years ago, we declared our independence from a distant king. Today, we are closer than ever to declaring our independence from a deadly virus. That's not to say the battle against COVID-19 is over. We've got a lot more work to do. But just as our declaration in 1776 was not a call to action, was a call to action, not a reason for complacency or a claim of victory, it was a call to action, the same is true today.
So then we beat the greatest empire on earth in the battlefield to win our freedom and establish a new land dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal and to liberty. And now we've gotten over the flu. So it's kind of the same thing, except completely different. And here's the one cut in this that really, really bugged me. This is cut eight.
I've long said that America is unique. Unlike every other nation on earth, we were founded based on an idea. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And while we've never fully lived up to those words, we have never given up on them.
They cannot say it. They cannot say it without talking about our imperfections. And, you know, obviously, what on earth is perfect? Nothing on earth is perfect. But they can't. It's kind of like going to somebody's birthday and saying, happy birthday, you're a year closer to dying. You know, it's not the moment. It's not the moment. It's the moment to celebrate. It's a moment to applaud, but they can't. NPR, this was unbelievable to me. NPR put a trigger warning on the declaration. Every year for 32 years, Morning Edition, this is NPR putting this out. Morning Edition has broadcast a reading of the Declaration of Independence by NPR staff as a way of marking Independence Day. But after last summer's protests and our national reckoning on race, the words of the document land differently. You can always tell when journalists are lying when they go into that passive voice. Land differently on whom? On whom? You know, it's not on everybody. Democrats, it was incredible. Cori Bush, congresswoman from Missouri, saying black people are still not free. Like, on what planet? And the interesting thing about this is a new poll from INITI Tip Polls finds that 68% of adults say they are very or extremely proud to be an American, with another 15% moderately proud. That is an enormous number. That is 80. I'm an English major, so I have to put it together. But it's 83% of Americans are proud to be Americans. The only age group that is not proud are young people aged 18 to 24. And why do you think that is? It's because these people, the Democrats, have taken over our institutions, Hollywood, the schools, the academies, and are teaching them not to be proud, and are teaching them also in this subtle way that they have something better, namely leftism and socialism. And leftism and socialism is a big lie that they are putting on these kids and forcing them to believe in it. Or at least to pretend to believe in it, which is also a terrible sin. It's a terrible sin to teach young people to be insincere, to lie, to get a grade. We'll be back talking more about this. We'll take some calls coming right up.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America first.
Absolutely. Andrew Klavan from The Daily Wire sitting in for the great Dr. Sebastian Gorka on American First. And on the side of the Constitution is what it is all about. You know, I say this a lot. I know we'd like to talk about right and left, and those are easy designations, and we all know what they mean. But we're really not in that position anymore. We're actually not dealing with right and left. We're dealing with friends of the founding and enemies of the founding. And that really is what it's about. I mean, there are plenty of discussions we can have between right and left, discussions of goodwill, discussions where there's room for compromise. But there is no way to really reach any kind of dialogue between people who are against the actual basic ideas of the founding, that basic idea that power comes from the ground up, from the individual up and not from Washington down. We're going to take some calls. Remember, if you want to call, it's 833-33-GORKA, 833-334-6752. We have Brent on the line from L.A. Brent, I'm sorry to hear you're in L.A. What's going on?
Well, God bless you, Andrew, for all your brilliant content.
Thank you.
And what I was wondering is, do you think what explains our Marx, Mao, Marcuse media is that it is fundamentally owned by Beijing? And that is what accounts for it not being run for profit as real corporations are?
That's a really interesting question. Thank you for calling, Brent. That's a really interesting question. And in some ways, it's true. They're not owned, literally owned by Beijing. But as Alex was talking about before, they are, in fact, indebted to Beijing. Remember, the media, each media outlet that you see is owned by other media outlets, and they have Hollywood arms, and they make movies and all this. And you remember with Fast and Furious Fast and Furious 9. I had it turned upside down. It's Fast and Furious 9. John Cena apologizing for calling Taiwan a country, the last free piece of ground. Now that Hong Kong has gone, the last free piece of ground associated with China, and it is, in fact, a country. He called it a country, and then he had to say he was Han. Sorry, Han being Chinese for very, or Chinese for I'm a wimp or something like that. I don't know what it's for. Han. Sorry for saying that, because he needed that movie to make a profit. And of course, that market is huge. And, you know, people made fun of John Cena, but it's not him. It's the company. He has to serve the company and serve the movie and keep his star rising. If he kills a big film like that with his big mouth speaking the truth, then he's the guy who gets stuck holding the bag. But it really is the company that's calling the shots. So in some sense, they're owned by the profit motive. They're owned by their desire to get that gigantic Chinese market. And listen, this has always been true of these guys. It's been true of Hollywood since the Nazi days. They want that market, even if the guy in charge would kill them if he got his hands on them. And that's true now, too. But there's something else. It's something in some ways that's even worse. A lot of ways, when I say we're not dealing with right and left anymore, I say that because China has created a new model of tyranny. It's not necessarily right. It's not necessarily left. And it puts to the lie things like the Ayn Rand idea that capitalism will save us all, that profit is everything. If you don't start with basic values, those basic values that grow out of Christianity and become the idea of freedom that is the American idea of freedom, if you don't start with those values, capitalism won't save you. No ism will save you. No system can save you if you don't have in the hearts and minds of the people, written on their hearts, if you don't have those values first. And right now, what we have is an elite class, a failed elite class, an elite class that has not done a good job of guiding this country into a better future, into a new world, consolidating around the idea that they are the experts and life is far, far too complicated for you little people. In fact, you're all going to be replaced by robots and we're going to give you a guaranteed income. So don't worry. You don't need any meaning in your life. You don't need any work in your life to guide your life. You don't need any dignity that you get from work. All you need is a guaranteed basic income. We'll replace you with a robot. And then we just sit back and we are going to run everything. Where they get the idea that they have the ability to do that, I don't know what it is about their achievements that makes them feel so good. But if you look, you know, the World Economic Forum, those are the guys who meet at Davos every year, and they're just the masters of the universe in their own minds, right? They have this thing called the Great Reset. And what's the Great Reset? The Great Reset is this is a moment. This is a crisis. Let's not let this crisis go to waste. Everything has changed because of the shutdown, the ridiculous, absurd, harmful shutdown that we had over the Chinese virus. That shutdown has been benevolent, that it has actually done good things, that it has saved a single life, is nowhere in evidence. There's a new study showing, no, it actually cost lives. It certainly cost dreams. It certainly cost the economy. For what? For a flu that killed people when they were very old and or very fat or had a lot of comorbidities. You know, it was a dangerous flu. I'm not mocking it. I'm not running it down. I'm just saying it was just as bad to close schools where kids are now going uneducated, where kids have lost their way. A lot of minority kids, poor kids that the left is supposed to care about so much, just have vanished. Will never make up those years, that year that they lost in school. So they closed it all down. So they now think, well, we've done such a good job ruining the economy and ruining the West that really we should take over everything. And so the World Economic Forum has this manifesto where they say, we enter a unique window of opportunity. I'm reading this from their website, to shape the recovery. We are going to do this. We billionaires, not you, not what you think should happen. We billionaires are going to do this. We're going to shape the recovery. This initiative will offer insights to help inform all those determining the future state of global relations. Note, not you, the direction of national economies, the priorities of societies, the nature of business models, and the management of a global commons. It's hard. I can't read that with like a George Soros accent just to get the kind of arrogance, the incredible arrogance. But that is essentially how China runs. So my point is that it's not that they're owned by China. It's that they are China. Their philosophies are exactly the same. China will let you go out and make a gazillion dollars. They will let the market work to the point where your good ideas will make you rich. But if you say, you know, maybe this communism is a bad idea, like Jack Ma said the other day, a billionaire in China, you vanish. You vanish, you know, without a trace. And Warren Buffett and his friend Charlie Munger, these two big investors, just gave an interview that said, yeah, well, he deserved it. You know, he didn't. China has got it all figured out. They're doing a great job. Well, he's not shouldn't be in the banking business. So they disappeared him, you know. It's the way they feel about you. So when you ask, is the media owned by China? Yes, in the sense that they want those profits. They get hungry for those profits, and they haven't got the values to say, we will not get those profits because it's wrong. We will not get those profits because we're patriots. So they're owned by them in that sense. But they're owned by them in an ideological sense as well. There is no difference. There is no difference. There is a hair of difference between the philosophy of the Chinese and how they bully people with social media and how they make your social ranking, you know, just they can drive you into despair with your social ranking, keep you from getting jobs, keep you from getting into college. Twitter wants to do that here. YouTube wants to do it here. Google wants to do it here. They're all the same guys. It's us against them. Andrew Klavan sitting in for Sebastian Gorka on America First. You know, when you go back to the founding documents, when you look at the Federalist Papers, some of the most brilliant political writing that has ever been done, just amazing. It's amazing stuff. You look at it and think, like, how did they know? And some of them, I think Madison was like 18, 19 when he was writing this stuff. But Madison, you know, one of the ideas that they had from studying history, and they looked at history very closely. They looked at the history of republics. They knew that the country, you know, that republics fall. They knew that anything that has a democratic element to it is unstable because the people are unstable. They knew it would always be, you know, a near-run thing, a close-run thing, whether it was going to survive or not. And one of the ideas that people had was they thought a democracy, a republic, has to be a small entity. You cannot have this big sprawling republic because how are the people going to get together? How are they going to know each other? And Madison said, no, this is actually different, a different situation. Because we've got these states, we can actually have small republics within a greater republic. But nobody, no matter how brilliant he is, can foresee the future. And this is one of the reasons why whenever I hear the experts telling me what the future is going to be like, I roll my eyes because they really don't know. You know, you go back and you look at the ideas of the future and they say, you remember the Jetsons? I don't know if anybody remembers the Jetsons, the cartoon of the future. They had mom and dad and the dog was a robot and everything was automatic. And they got all the automatic stuff, but they never thought of the idea that maybe mom isn't going to want to be mom anymore. Maybe mom's not going to want to be in the house. And one of the things that the founders did not foresee is the media, the way the media brings us together and glues us together so that, you know, it really used to be within living memory that if you were living in Tennessee, and somebody else was doing something crazy in New York, you might shake your head over it, but it really had nothing to do with you. Now with the media, it reaches into your home. It's there every minute. And it gives Washington a way of reaching into your home and being there. I remember when Obama started this whole transgender thing, one of the things about Obama is because all his policies actually failed, because they hobbled the economy, because they set the Middle East on fire, he was always going to hot button issues to restore his confidence. And that was why he was constantly harping on race. That's why we went into the Obama administration with fairly good race relations and came out of it with miserable race relations. And he said, you know, people have to allow transgender people to use the bathroom that they choose in their elementary schools. And I immediately thought, oh, the Democrats are going to lose the next election, because why should a Chicago Paul, in Washington, D.C., be telling somebody in Arkansas who can use his school, where his daughter, where his little girl goes to school? What does he know about Arkansas? The answer is zip doodly nothing. You know, he knows absolutely nothing about it. And yet television has kind of brought us all together. It's gotten rid of our regional accents. It's gotten rid of our regional pride. And it's certainly gotten rid of the idea that Washington is a far, far away place where they do not know who you are. And not only do they not know, they don't like you. They don't like what they see, because they get their ideas just like everybody else. They get their ideas from Hollywood. They think everybody in the South is a bigot and all white people are dumb. You know, the whole thing, the whole routine is what they're looking at. And that is the big thing we're dealing with. We're dealing with the media. We're dealing with what the media can do. And we're dealing with what huge institutions can do to our democracy.